Hello and welcome to this edition of InfraLogic Podcast, where we discuss the infrastructure sector, its trends and challenges, and the growing interest from investors in the area. I'm Tanu Pandey, a part of InfraLogic's editorial team in London, and I'll be your host for the podcast today. We are recording this podcast at a time when the world is going through a major transition with the growing need for infrastructure and large focus on energy transition. A major portion of global investments needed in infrastructure are right now in the emerging markets, with an annual need for $920 billion for long-term investors. Having said that, the emerging markets in Asia are said to be the fastest growing one. To discuss this, we have someone from one of the most active investors in the emerging markets in infrastructure, Actis, which has raised $26 billion so far. Last October, Actis joined forces with General Atlantic and as a global investment platform now has $108 billion combined as assets under management. We have with us Adrian Mikhailov, a partner at Actis and the head of its Long Life Infrastructure Fund, which recently closed its second fund at $1.7 billion. Adrian has led the fund's early transactions in emerging markets such as Chile, Brazil, India, and the Middle East and Africa. Before that, he worked within Actis energy sector team. Welcome, Adrian, and thanks for taking out time for this edition of InfraLogic Podcast. Jumping right into the conversation, the first question here. Why does Actis focus on growth markets and sustainable infrastructure investments? Why take this approach?
Thank you, Tanu. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about our passion of investing in critical infrastructure. You say in emerging markets, what we like to refer to as the world's growth markets, or otherwise we like to say most of the world. You know, sometimes people have referred to these markets as the rest of the world, but we like to remind everyone that actually these are the markets where about 85% of the world's population lives, and many of the world's highest, fastest growing economies, and actually just some of the world's largest economies. And we believe that in the infrastructure space, there is just a really interesting supply-demand equation in our markets where, you know, historically, and even today, you know, the majority of capital, you know, the significant majority of capital is raised for and invested in the developed markets, whereas we believe the majority actually of infrastructure opportunity is in our markets. So we think investing in markets where we see, you know, over two-thirds of the investment opportunity, whereas over two-thirds of the capital is raised in the space for North America, Western Europe, Australia. And there's just a massive opportunity to invest into infrastructure in these markets. So these are markets that are rapidly growing and that all have a need for fundamental, critical, long-term infrastructure. And we'll talk about some of those themes, I'm sure, today, whether it's renewable energy, whether it's growing and reinforcing the electricity grids. You know, a big part of what we do is in the electricity sector, as you mentioned, but we also invest into transport infrastructure such as roads, and we invest heavily into the digital infrastructure revolution, including data centers, towers, and fiber. And across all of our markets, there's a massive need for investment in those areas. One example, when we talk about renewable energy, which is probably the largest single category for investment, there is more renewable energy being built, more renewable energy plants being built in our markets every year than in developed markets. Yet, you know, the vast majority of the capital chases opportunities in those markets. So we think the natural result of that supply-demand imbalance is, you know, really interesting risk-adjusted returns for investors who have the deep experience to, you know, operate effectively in our markets.
Very interesting, valid point on calling it a growth market rather than emerging markets. However, on a follow-up question, emerging markets have gone through a transformation, particularly in energy and other infrastructure sectors over the past few years. How has Actis seen the markets evolve, and how has it altered or improved its strategy to accommodate all these shifts?
Thanks. It's a big question. First, I would say even the term emerging markets or growth markets, you know, we think is quite antiquated, right? There are over 100 countries that are often bucketed into that category of emerging markets. And, you know, some of those countries couldn't be more different, right? If you're looking at countries like India, right, which is just one of the world's largest economies and has been growing at 5-7% per year, or you know, other big middle-income countries we invest in like Brazil or Mexico, you know, are very different than markets in Southeast Asia or markets in Sub-Saharan Africa or markets in Eastern Europe. You know, all of the markets offer investment opportunities, but we think that there are more sophisticated ways to think about markets than just bucketing them as developed markets or emerging markets. And I think that's the, I know we'll talk about sort of the perception of risk in our markets. The markets are often painted with one brush, and we just think that that's, you know, not a sophisticated way to invest. You know, some of the markets that where we invest have, you know, very mature regulatory frameworks. So to get to the heart of your question, investing in some of our markets, you know, 30 years ago, you know, would have been a very different environment. But when we're investing in the large target markets such as India or Brazil, you know, we're investing in renewable energy or toll roads or electricity transmission, you know, these are very well-worn sectors where billions and billions and billions of dollars of private capital, both foreign capital and domestic capital, have been raised to successfully invest into these sectors. And I think often investors don't actually realize how mature and stabilized the regulatory environment has become in those markets. You know, there are very transparent auctions that take place regularly, you know, every few months in some of the larger markets. As an investor, you can diligence 15 or 20 or 30 years of track record, right? So it's not that we're, sometimes I feel that we receive questions where investors are worried that we're sort of taking a bet on these markets. And I say, no, it's not a bet. We're looking at 20 years of track record. Let's look at the last 20 years. Let's look at, have the off-takers paid their bills? Has the regulation been stable? If there have been any disputes, how have they been resolved? Have the courts or the industry bodies or regulatory bodies favorably resolved and fairly resolved any kind of disputes that do arise? I can tell you in the major markets where we invest, the track record is excellent. Right? If you're investing in the right assets with the right off-taker and the right contractual protections, I think that's been the biggest change is the maturity of regulation. And again, I wouldn't make that claim for all emerging markets. I also wouldn't make that claim for all developed markets. But I think that we invite investors to work with firms like ours to look at the markets that have that maturity of regulation. The second thing I would say is that because of that maturity and the expansion of the opportunity, it's opened up new kinds of investment opportunities, right? So for the last 25 years, we have been investing in power generation. And you mentioned that I used to be in our energy sector team. In that fund, you know, we have been building, buying, and operating power generation assets, you know, for the last 25 years across all of the main growth markets. And that opportunity continues. You know, we say not only do we need to build enough power plants to basically double the world's energy generation in the next 20 or 30 years, we also need to replace most of the existing power generation with renewable energy. So I know that it's almost like building two new planets full of power plants. And you know, much of that growth is happening in our market. So that opportunity persists. However, now there's also an opportunity to invest in long-term contracted stabilized assets. And you know, that's the strategy that I lead within the firm, what we call the Actis Long Life Infrastructure Strategy, where now there are hundreds of billions of dollars of long-term contracted infrastructure assets across those sectors that I referred to, where one can invest and improve the assets and generate cash yield and sort of deploy a more traditional of core infrastructure strategy. And I would say that, you know, that strategy probably wouldn't have been available 20 or 30 years ago when in private infrastructure in these markets was newer. You know, the other obvious new explosive vector is the digital infrastructure space. And so with the same dynamics that investors see in the US and Europe, whether it's data centers, carve-outs of towers and fiber businesses, and creating infrastructure assets out of that critical digital infrastructure, you know, all of those same trends are happening in our markets. We think almost a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to invest in the energy space, but also the digital space alongside other traditional infrastructure sectors. And I think that boom is happening right now across Asia, across Latin America, across parts of Eastern Europe, Middle East, Africa.
Just taking a little bit more on, you mentioned painting all markets, growth markets, with the same brush. A lot of times, some might consider the emerging markets risky, but you have pushed back on that idea, saying growth markets are not risky. And why is this? How does Actis sort of mitigate against these risks in these markets? And what is your answer to those who consider or claim that they would probably stay away from these markets because they're risky?
Thank you for the question and the opportunity to comment on this. I think this is the topic which I spend the most time discussing, you know, with our investors and stakeholders. And again, when we think of most of the world, exactly as you said, we should not paint all growth markets with the same brush. And, you know, we've developed our own tool that we call the Actis Atlas and say, you know, instead of just labeling markets as developed or emerging, we think about global champions. We think about large middle-income countries. We think about small stable countries. And then we think about more fragile economies, right? There are many different types of economies, you know, some that are more focused on resource extraction and export, some that are more built into global supply chains and sort of export-based economies of a non-resource. So there are many different kinds of economies. And again, we're probably focused on 15 or so countries that have, you know, the large replicable infrastructure programs with a great track record, you know, of private participation. Now, so I would not make the claim that investing generally in all emerging markets is low risk. That's not the case. You know, I think that actually a lot of investors have the experience that they've invested in other types of products. They've maybe invested in the stock market in our markets and, you know, have had mixed experiences. But infrastructure is a special category in the sense that in order to attract the capital needed for this true critical infrastructure, which is really the backbone of economic growth in many countries, many of our markets really do rely on foreign capital, whether it's foreign equity capital, and even in many cases, foreign, you know, debt capital to fund their infrastructure programs. And in order to attract that capital, they offer, you know, many kinds of risk protections that wouldn't be available in other categories of investing. So for example, even just having really long-term contracts with essentially fixed prices, you know, often inflation index revenues, an asset where you basically know what your revenue will be for the next 25 or 30 years, you know, is very different than other types of investing. So, and I would say some of those really long-term contracts are becoming less available in the developed markets, but it's still the norm in most of our markets. So the starting point is real long-term contracted infrastructure, real critical infrastructure. When we're doing renewable energy, generally investing in wind and solar plants, in most of our markets, these are literally the lowest cost power available, right? So this is power that the country needs in growing economies. And we would say, you know, investing in a critical service, which is really needed by the government and by the population and by the users, and providing a low cost way to provide that service, that's the best risk mitigation that you can have. Beyond all that, then are really specific contractual protections that are usually offered to infrastructure investors, which again are not typically available for many other kinds of investing. So, you know, some combination of government guarantees behind your projects. As I said, inflation indexation of your revenues, you know, is a big topic in global investing. And that, you know, that is the norm in many categories of infrastructure in our markets. Many markets actually offer US dollar linked contracts. So, you know, currency risk is a risk that any global investors have to manage. Many emerging markets or growth markets actually offer US dollar linked contracts to attract that capital. In some of our assets, we also have political risk insurance from the likes of the World Bank, you know, MIGA program or other political risk insurance providers. There may be other downside protections in your contract, like in for investing in roads. Sometimes there are, you know, minimum traffic guarantees. You know, many of our assets have what we call availability-based contracts, right, where you're not actually even taking volume risk. So when you break that down and you look at, you know, are you taking pricing risk? Are you taking volume risk? Do you have a long-term contract? Are you taking currency risk? Are you taking inflation risk? Are you taking interest rate risk? Do you have government guarantees or other off-taker, you know, credit enhancement? Often the answer is yes. So now if you package all of that together, I would say you can make very risky investments in most markets, but you definitely can find long-term contracted, well-mitigated, lower risk infrastructure assets in our markets. And I would say the same thing about Europe or the US. There are many investments even that are portrayed as infrastructure where you're taking many kinds of risk, growth risk and pricing risk and volume risk. So it really depends on the nature of the investment. And in our markets, it's a very large opportunity to invest in true long-term contracted critical infrastructure with those contractual protections. There's a wide range of types of investments, but in the infrastructure space, it's a really attractive risk-adjusted return opportunity.
Right. And moving on, Long Life Infrastructure Fund, the hat that you wear, it's a strategy that invests in power as well as other infrastructure assets, roads, digital infrastructure. It's a sort of all-in-one kind of theme for long-term infrastructure, where there are not many of such funds. And what is the focus there? And if you could take us through some basic ideas behind the strategy. And we know that you are there and you were from the beginning of the strategy, you were the mind behind it. What's the focus there?
Thank you. Yes. So the long life infrastructure strategy we developed to capture this opportunity to be a long-term owner of assets in our markets. And you know, many of the companies that construct these assets, actually, their business model is not to be long-term operators and owners, right? If we're buying from a developer or from a construction company or from a local family conglomerate, they actually often, it's not their business model, right, to be the long-term owner. So these assets do need long-term, responsible, experienced operational owners. And so we developed this strategy to acquire those kinds of long-term contracted operating infrastructure assets, as we've been discussing. You mentioned we do invest across sectors, and that's deliberate to provide real diversification to our investors, right? Diversification by region, by currency, by sector, by type of asset. So in a fund, we may have dozens of individual assets managed within a number of portfolio companies to provide that kind of real global diversification. But fundamentally, we are investing in long-term contracted operating assets with many layers of downside protection. We're focused on delivering a very substantial portion of the return through annual cash yields or dividends. And we think in many ways it's a return to the infrastructure sector when it was first developed as an asset class. I would say it's actually what many investors were seeking when they're thinking about infrastructure investing. They were thinking about assets that are real hard assets providing critical services to the population, that have long-term contracts, that have regular, fairly reliable cash flows and cash yields on an annual basis. They were thinking about assets where the returns are not correlated to the stock market and to other asset classes. And that was the power of infrastructure in a portfolio. Not really, it's very, very defensive a sector and not really linked to economic cycles in the same way. As some of the industry has sort of become more similar to other kinds of investing, sort of looking at high growth investments and depending the entirety of the return on a capital gain. And we think that actually this kind of investing is what many investors want in their portfolio. I think we're providing an interesting option to have true diversification in these investments that are really uncorrelated and that are really diversified and that fundamentally provide that type of long-term contracted regular cash yielding profile. So that's why we developed the strategy. And I think there's been great interest. And I think especially in the last few months, I think investors have especially focused on looking for opportunities to truly diversify because many investors are overweight in certain developed markets.
Right. And in the energy sector particularly, what are the focus segments currently for actors? Are the geopolitical and economic policies in various markets leading to a renewed focus on some newer or more non-traditional sectors?
In our target markets, I would say one of the benefits is that we don't need to look for speculative or very new technologies. We are investing primarily in really tried and tested technologies. Of course, within those categories, there are always advances about how to become more efficient and provide the same service at a lower cost. But fundamentally, we're doing wind power generation, solar power generation, sometimes gas-fired generation, where that's part of the local energy transition. But beyond power generation, the other real backbone of the system is the grid, right? The transmission grid and the electricity distribution grid. And we say you can't have energy transition without transmission. In renewable energy in particular, often the areas that have the great wind speeds or the great solar irradiation, maybe in the mountains or in the desert or like actually quite far from the population center. So the need for electricity transmission to bring that renewable energy from those areas to the cities is just as important as building the power generation. So we're invested heavily into electricity transmission in places like Brazil that have those kinds of characteristics. And then if you look at electricity distribution, which is then taking the electricity from the grid and really powering people's homes and businesses. Again, the more there is intermittent renewable energy on the system, you need a lot of investments into the grid to be able to manage the complexities of the electricity system. So we invest across those very traditional backbone electricity subsectors. Beyond that, one interesting sector we've looked at in the energy space is what we call district energy. So in particular, in the Middle East, which is the world leader in district cooling. I'm based in Singapore. There's also a lot of district cooling here in Singapore. This is the kind of technology that we like because it's providing true critical infrastructure. And look, fundamentally, basically, district cooling is a technology where you can provide air conditioning, basically cooling, in a centralized way, you know, from centralized plants and then distributing cooling through pipes throughout a community. So rather than every building having its own air conditioner, it's basically done centrally and then piped. And by doing it that way, typically, you can use about half as much energy to generate that cooling compared to every building having its own air conditioning system. So, you know, tremendous sustainability story, you know, tremendous savings in energy. And, you know, the main focus after investing in this business is, you know, how to become even more efficient in the use of energy, becoming more efficient in the use of water, using recycled water rather than fresh water. So, you know, in areas where water is scarce, obviously, that's also a big issue for cooling. So that's an example of using energy in a different way to provide other critical infrastructure. But, you know, we're not investing ourselves in sort of, you know, speculative technologies, I would say.
Just a little follow-up question on this district cooling. Do you think it would be an easy transition maybe in the short term because consumers would need to take to it? Is there a big market? You mentioned the Middle East, but elsewhere in the growth markets, do you see there is a market for this kind of opportunity?
It is a rapidly growing market globally. It is in the Middle East. The Middle Eastern region is the world leader in that and rollout of that technology. And it is the preferred mode of cooling and air conditioning in many parts of that region in the Gulf. We do have district cooling, as I said, here in Singapore and parts of Southeast Asia. You know, it is a very advanced and efficient way to cool buildings. The real estate developers or government agencies, you know, do need to be quite forward-looking and organized to implement those kinds of systems because it is normally better to implement the systems when you are rolling out new real estate developments. You know, what you can also retrofit older buildings, but I think the most efficient way to do it is to have it as a part of the urban planning. And because there's been such growth in cities and urban planning, you know, in the Middle East, and because the temperatures are so high and cooling is such a sort of 24/7, you know, fundamental requirement, I think it's natural that those markets have been the leaders. But we know that India is looking a lot more at district cooling and, you know, some of our biggest markets. So I do think it's definitely a growth sector across warm places.
Right. And in terms of geographies for the markets that you cover, are there any particular countries or markets which you're more bullish on or which are less riskier that you consider if you had to choose like top five, maybe which ones would it be?
So generally in infrastructure, thinking about the markets that we're focused on, I don't want to characterize that the country or market in general is less risky, but I would say that in these markets, as I've been saying, that have these very well-established regulatory regimes, there are lower risk opportunities available. There are also high risk, high growth opportunities available, which can also be exciting for other kinds of investment strategies. But if you're looking for, you know, long-term contracted sort of core infrastructure, the natural places to look are the really, you know, large markets that have well-established, repeatable infrastructure programs. India and Brazil are our two largest, you know, single markets that we've invested in since we've launched this strategy. But many of the markets of Latin America, you know, fit that description. Most markets, most of the large countries in Latin America, you know, substantially privatized their infrastructure programs as far back as the 1990s, you know, with a lot of World Bank support. So, and again, there's, you know, 20 or 30 years of track record in most of the infrastructure categories. In Asia, you know, besides India, and Southeast Asia is a very vibrant region. You know, as a firm, we have activities in most of the major markets of Southeast Asia. And so Southeast Asia has, you know, very large economies. And, you know, the Philippines, as an example, is a country where there's been very, very substantial ownership of infrastructure by private firms. And they've been welcoming more than ever, you know, foreign investors alongside the domestic private capital to meet their infrastructure ambitions. I could tell you a similar story about, you know, most of the countries of Southeast Asia. So this is a natural area of growth for us. You know, as a firm, over half of our capital is invested into Asia. And sometimes people say Asia's the future. I would say Asia's the present. You know, Asia's already close to 40% of the world's GDP, depending on how you measure it. And, you know, sometime soon it'll be half the world's GDP. So, you know, I think investors who have, you know, no exposure in their real assets program to Asia are missing an opportunity. And I know this is a huge part of the world's growth and will be for many, many years to come. You know, we're also very excited about what's happening in parts of Eastern Europe, where, you know, the energy transition in particular is a very important part of government policy, where most of the power there is really classic traditional thermal energy. And there's a real need to supplement and replace that over time with renewable energy. We're investing more than ever in the Middle East. So I gave the example, we're invested in the district cooling company in Dubai, but we're also doing renewable energy. And I think many other investors have seen that opportunity. We've seen, you know, some competitors also opening offices in the region. So I think the MENA region is providing more investment opportunity than ever, you know, often partnering with local firms and institutions who are looking for foreign capital and expertise to work alongside them.
Very interesting. Switching gears a little bit here, coming towards the end of our conversation. Last year, General Atlantic, the transaction happened and you became this large entity. Has that acquisition somehow impacted your fundraising or strategy? And how does Actis view this sort of merger in terms of consolidation of themes or strategies?
The merger is very exciting for Actis. I think being part of a bigger group like General Atlantic, one of the world's preeminent, most respected asset management firms, that's been a real leader in growth equity, obviously is exciting for us and our teams. And we know they've also had a lot of conviction in the growth markets, you know, for a long time. They've invested very significantly across Asia and across Latin America, alongside their investment in the US and Europe for decades, actually. So it's been a very natural fit. You know, Actis is the real assets business, you know, within General Atlantic. So in some sense, from a day-to-day investment perspective, it's been business as usual. But we think that from a longer-term perspective, you know, we hear very often from our capital partners, from our investors, that they appreciate working with, you know, large multi-product firms where we can really offer solutions. You know, LPs at different times have different needs, where they may be looking for more growth, more capital gain. They're interested in private equity, they're interested in infrastructure, they're interested in credit, and being part of a larger group with more products to offer and really being a solutions provider and a partner. We call it capital partnering because we want to be partners with the investors to help meet their needs, and they help us meet our investment ambitions. So I think for us, it's been a very natural and exciting partnership and can lead to a lot of growth where we can invest even more into these tremendous infrastructure opportunities that we see. Now, you asked about where there are maybe overlaps or synergies. I think the obvious place for us is in the digital space. So whereas Actis is focused on the infrastructure side of technology and digital, and providing the backbone infrastructure and data centers and towers and fiber, you know, General Atlantic for decades has been a leader in technology investing. And they are close to and invested in and know the ecosystem of many of the world's leading, you know, technology companies that require the data center capacity, the infrastructure that we can build and operate, or the technology companies that use those services. So I think there's a really natural synergy given their focus on technology and our, you know, very much increasing focus on digital infrastructure.
Right. And is there anything that you would like to add? Maybe one key point or your views on where the emerging market is going, the large investment opportunity that is there in the infrastructure space, and what are we going to see, maybe the key themes that we're going to see this year and next, sort of in the short term?
I believe that diversification has been a real theme for investors recently, and I believe that more investors than ever are seeing the opportunity in our markets. You know, we've seen many global competitors start to open offices in some of our markets. And we welcome that. Sometimes we get asked about competition. We welcome that competition because it will make it more mainstream, as it should be, to invest in Asia, you know, in some of our core markets. So, you know, we see that, you know, there is more interest than ever to invest into this opportunity of infrastructure in the growth markets, both to continue to build assets, to build power plants, build data centers. You know, the greenfield opportunity is tremendous. And as I've been talking about, we also think that the opportunity to buy great, high quality operating assets and then improve them is tremendous. And maybe that's one theme we didn't talk about as much, but we're not a passive financial investor. No, we are very much an active, usually control type of investor, where we want to use real global best practices and capabilities to take what are already great assets, but, you know, make them even greater in every way and apply global best practices to provide, you know, even lower cost, more efficient, higher quality, you know, safer infrastructure assets in our markets. And I think that that combination of, you know, being on the ground, you know, doing this for decades, you know, being deeply, deeply integrated into those local ecosystems, as well as being deeply integrated and ingrained into the global infrastructure ecosystems. I think that's really the key to success in investing in the sector.
Well, that was a very interesting and insightful conversation, particularly your points on the rapid growth in the emerging / growth markets, the maturity that it is showing right now, and the opportunities in some of the sectors like district cooling in the Middle East. And not to forget, Asia is not the future, but the present, like you mentioned. Thank you very much for this lovely discussion and also your great insights into the emerging markets and the infrastructure sector, Adrian. And we hope to see you again for another equally interesting and insightful chat very soon.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for the invitation and very excited to talk about this opportunity anytime you'd like in the future. Thank you.
This is your host, Tanu Pandey, for Crossroads, the InfraLogic podcast. Please like and download this podcast to support. Do not forget to subscribe for the latest episodes. Thanks very much for listening to this episode and look forward to be back soon with another interesting one on infrastructure.